Sid. He joins us now from Brooklyn. Sid, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. And
good to hear.
Yeah, I just it's easy, you know, if you're inclined and inquisitive, it's easy to find ways to, you know, to occupy yourself during during this scenario, you know, especially if you're into the game, you know, whether it's, you know, here it is Derby, you know, it's still the first week of May, and so, you know, there's lots of Derby interest and things to talk about that way, and yesterday's visit with NASCAR, people just loved, and you know. Then when you think about what he did, you know, after his racing career was over, it's equally remarkable.
Yeah, pivotal Derby for sure, and a great horseman.
Yeah, and you know, so much came out of that. You know, the Mrs. Genter, you know, that moment that is you know, continued to. You every time you watch it, you get choked up, and that part of it is you know, that I put that up yesterday. Actually, people, you know, they've had a huge reaction just to the video clip of the minute of her, you know, listening to Carl as Unbridled is rallying. Part of the story I brought up. In fact, I introduced the discussion yesterday, Sid, with Carl. About the acquisition and how, you know, he was directly tied anyway to it because of Nayrud and because of Tartan Farms. And you know, that he basically credited John Nayrud with, you know, getting Mrs. Genter to buy Unbridled as a weanling because she had the mare. The interesting story from there, but I mean, you know, the McKnight, Tartan, Nayrud influence in this story, you know, is obviously going to live on forever in the stud book.
It is. And there's actually some behind-the-scenes parts to this story I've touched upon before. But it was during the time that Fappiano was standing at Tartan for Nayrud. And Nayrud, obviously, a fabulous horseman, master breeder. He bred Fappiano. And one of the things about Nayrud was he was not above seeking advice. And because, you know, Fappiano was his own horse too, he wanted, been good friends with my friend Leon Rasmussen, who was the Bloodlines columnist for Daily Racing Forum, and he solicited Leon's advice about, you know, breeding to Fappiano, and Leon, who was a big advocate of inbreeding to superior females, said, "Look, John, you've got the best opportunity here to breed to Fappiano by inbreeding to some of the iconic Tartan Foundation mares in his pedigree. Two of those were Sequillo, his own, I think his third or second dam, and the other one was Aspidistra, the dam of Dr. Fager, the Tartan icon. And this is exactly what Nayrud did. Two stark examples of that were Quiet American, the broodmare sire of Charlatan, and Unbridled. Now, if you take a look, if you want to just pull up the pedigrees of those two, if you look at, let's say, Unbridled first, you'll see that Unbridled is inbred to Aspidistra. Unbridled's fourth dam is Aspidistra. And Fappiano, of course, was out of Dr. Fager mare. His dam is Aspidistra. So you have that inbreeding to Aspidistra, which is that inbreeding to the superior female that Leon had advocated. The same thing, if you take a look at Quiet American, you'll see that the inbreeding there takes place to, there's a lot of inbreeding, but the female family inbreeding is to Sequillo, who was the third dam of Fapiano and who was the third dam of Quiet American. You also have inbreeding to Dr. Fager in there too, because of course Quiet American was out of Dr. Fager mare. So those two horses, Quiet American and Unbridled, both by Fapiano, both bred by Tartan, with John Nerud, of course, planning all the Tartan matings, directly from the advice of Leon Rasmussen. And he, you know, John had asked Leon's advice earlier, too, because getting back to Unbridled, if you notice something very interesting in Unbridled's pedigree, and that is that his broodmare sire was the French Derby winner Le Fabuleux, who stood at Claiborne. And Leon was a big, big advocate of breeding to some of these European imports, and he actually had suggested to John Nerud a generation earlier about breeding the in reality mare Shiretti to Le Fabuleux. That's how Unbridled's Dam Gianna Facile came about. At that time, Nerud, for both Tartan himself and the Genter stables who were based there, started to use a lot of the European imports during the 60s, 70s, 80s. Horses like Le Fabuleux, horses like Caro. If you remember, Dr. Carter was by Caro. Cozine was by Caro.
Right.
And so there's, you know, that's kind of a lot of the behind the scenes stuff that nobody really knew about, because Leon had confided to me in it, but he told me never to mention that until both he and John Nerud had passed. Of course, John lived a long time.
Hit the weight.
Yeah, so I actually had this. I actually was the only person alive who knew the story, and once both of them passed, I felt free to explain to other aficionados of pedigrees some of the backstory behind that. Now it's interesting because the influence of both Quiet American and Unbridled, they've had tremendous influence on the bottom half of pedigrees, i.e. as a broodmare sire, you know? And that's been a big, big part of their subsequent reputations. And part of that reasoning is that inbreeding to that female family, you know, they both have a doubling up of great broodmares in their respective families. And I'm not surprised at their influence as broodmare sires. Of course, Unbridled, he had a Derby winner in his first crop that was Grindstone, but he had another colt in his first crop, Unbridled Song. And that horse, Unbridled Song, of course, has become the mainstay for him on the sire line part of it. So he's still quite alive on that sire line through Unbridled Song. But if you notice, Unbridled Song himself, by the way, who's out of a Caro mare, that Unbridled Song is also exerting a tremendous influence, even a bigger influence as a broodmare sire than he has as a sire of sires. Now, he's still got Arrogate to come. He's got the young sire Liam's Map, He's got some other, you know, promising sons. But you'll note that his influence has kind of taken on that broodmare sire element to him. And it's interesting just to mention Liam's map, too. Liam's map, we actually, I worked there with consultants. We actually had recommended Unbridled Song for the Dan Miss Macy Sue for the Albaugh Family Trust. And Miss Macy Sue, the dam of Liam's map, was bred by Brian Howlett, who was an assistant to John Nerud. And one of the key elements in her pedigree, Steve, was that her dam, Yada Yada, if you look it up, her dam Yada Yada, which Brian bred as well, is inbred 2x3 to Tawi. So you can see the how this idea of inbreeding to the female family went from John Nerud down to Brian Howlett, his assistant. And he did the same thing in his mating, which is, again, Leon's concept of inbreeding to that female family. And it came full circle when we did the mating for Liam's map, because we had this extremely inbred mare in the family. And it was a tartan of Tawi family, and of course Unbridled Song was by Unbridled, who is inbred to Aspidistra, the dam of Tawi. So you have multiple strains of Aspidistra in the pedigree of Liam's map. But these are some of the stories that take place behind the stories, and the influence of certain ideologies that get passed down within an organization. And, you know, I take my hat off to John Nerud, because, you know, here's a guy, he knew what he was doing, but at the same time, it wasn't above him to call up Leon and say, "Hey, Leon, what do you think?" You know? And the net result is that we have two stallions, Unbridled and Quiet American, who are having some lasting impression as broodmare sires. And of course, Charlatan is the most recent example of that.
I'm thumbing through all of these pedigrees as you discuss, and Charlatan with Authenticity, you know, and looking down at the female line. There's a couple of immediate strengths, then a little bit of a lesser known pair, the third dam, well, Appealing Missy, and a leafier mare, and then a quack mare out of Joint. So there's some interesting names that you don't necessarily see even, you know, even in that proximity. And when you look at Nadal, he isn't necessarily as, you know, as heavily involved with the you know, storyline. But boy, you look at the, you know, the influence, and you just see all those. All really, you mentioned Aspidistra and you know, Dr. Fager, Rough and Tumble. It's My Dear Girl. I mean, there's just Nerud's got his thumbprint all over it, and you know, then the story, you know, burgeons from there. We had a lot of fun. We had really had a lot of fun yesterday with Carl. And I wanted to give you a chance to, and that's kind of the unexpected,
thanks.
You know.
Yeah. I did want to let your listeners in on that story, because it's really a fascinating
awesome.
Story that ties in with a lot of this, and kind of explains the impact of Unbridled, and not only, you know, at when he was a sire as a stallion himself, but he'd started off, he went to Gainesway, and then from Gainesway he went to Claiborne. But it also explains this broodmare sire ability of his, you know, and that's a massive element to him. And as I pointed out, it's the big element of Unbridled Song as well.
Yeah, there's one thing too that we should mention. I mean, considering how much you see Unbridled close up, whether it's, you know, the Unbridled Song influence and now his sons and as a broodmare sire, or Empire Maker and, mm-hmm. you know, so on. He died young. He died at 14.
He did. And of course, exactly. He died very young. Imagine what his influence could have been. And of course, you know, Empire Maker was sent to Japan and came back here and unfortunately died this year. And, you know, this is a line that created American Pharoah. And so you have the Empire Maker branch of that line still very vibrant as a sire line, too. And that's hopefully going to be the line that continues on, because if the Unbridled Song branch, which is hanging by just a few strings at this moment, if that branch cannot continue, well, you still have this branch of Pioneer of the Nile, Empire Maker, Unbridled. And, of course, Pioneer of the Nile died as well. A Bodemeister, another son of Empire Maker, was sent to Turkey. But we've got American Pharoah, who is the leading stallion, freshman sire last year. And, interestingly, another grade one winning son of Empire Maker, Eight Rings, has been, you know, of course, Colmore has purchased the breeding rights to that horse, and he'll enter stud, which gives another opportunity for the line. And as I mentioned, Arrogate for the Unbridled Song branch of that line is still very viable, as is Liam's Map, who had two G1 winners in his first crop last year. Cross Traffic was the leading freshman sire at Spendthrift, had a quiet year last year, but he's still in the ballpark too. So I don't mean to say that the Unbridled Song branch is petering out. It's still hanging around, of course, by a few threads. But the Empire Maker branch with American Pharoah certainly has a lot of promise to come.
Well, the two Arkansas Derby winners coming out of Saturday, more or less reinforcing what we already have discussed. Here's Spitestown. I think Sid, as you might have heard with Andy Beyer earlier, you know, there is some question as to, and you know, we all kind of wondered out loud, how far Charlatan wants to go. But Nadal moving forward, you know, this is really helpful to Blame, who has had this, you know, this mid-career resurgence that is, just evident, I think, more and more to everybody.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, Blame now has five G1 winners, but this is his first G1 winning colt. Spitestown, my feelings for Spitestown aren't so much if they're going to stay mile and a quarter, because he's had plenty of horses who have. It's always been, and I pointed this out on your show last week, he's never had, until sharing last year from his 18 G1 winners, he's never had a G1 winner win a G1 before July of its three-year-old season. Sharing did it on the turf as a two-year-old, wasn't the exception to the rule, but now Charlatan has become the first horse on dirt, the first colt, and the first classic colt for Spikestown to be able to win a G1 before July of its three-year-old season. Once again, you know, another hurdle that has been crossed with Baffert at the helm. Baffert won the Kentucky Derby with an unraised horse for the first time since Apollo with Justify. He's now become the first trainer to have a colt by Spikestown win a G1 before July of its three-year-old season. We're talking over 1,000 foals, okay? So, and 18 G1 winners. So, he has the female family be able to get the trip. And Spikestown has, you and I, in fact, last week went through a bunch of them that actually did win at a mile and a quarter. The real question was,
that's right,
as with Unbridled Song, Spikestown really tends to get later maturing horses. People sometimes think that because he was a speedy horse, because of his own musculature, because of the look he'll give a horse, just like the Unbridled Songs, they were pushed a little earlier when they shouldn't have been. And then, like Unbridled Song, you saw, you know, horses breaking down a bit, giving that horse a bit of a reputation. However, and I mentioned this in a conversation with Baffert the other day, too. Baffert was one of the first guys, along with Todd Pletcher, to realize, let's give these Unbridled Songs a little more time. And when they started doing that, both of them started to have success with those types of horses, Pletcher, he had, I believe, Cross Traffic, the Gradar, these horses by Unbridled Song,
right,
that came on late and became top horses. Baffert did the same thing, Sensational, and then most notably Arrogant came on and became good horses late. Well, he's done the same thing with this Charlatan. Charlatan, with Arrogant, what happened was Baffert realized the horse was getting some shins early on. And a natural thing, you know, when you have a horse like that, it started to show there. Some guys might have, you know, kept with it. Baffert had suggested pin-firing the horse, but Khalid Abdullah is against pin-firing of horses. It's a big no-no. So what Baffert did was send Arrogate back to Judmont in Kentucky to Garrett O'Rourke to get over it naturally, and so came back later. Same thing happened with Charlatan. A couple of issues with his two-year-old, gave him some time, and brought him back in, and you see that maturity is starting to kick in a little later, but that's what they need. And these good trainers, they have been able to make those adjustments and give them that time they needed. And it's kind of paying off, because I think for Charlatan, a Derby in September would have been a heck of a lot better for him than a Derby in May, based on Spikestown's own record. So I'm not too concerned about his ability to get a mile and a quarter, because his dam is by Quiet American. She was a grade one place, graded stakes winner, you know, who was a horse that got two turns. And the second dam is by Deputy Minister. The third dam, Appealing Missy, is by Lee Fard horse, Life Yore. So there's nothing here in this pedigree that's going to scare me on the female side. In fact, it's pretty good. And with Spikestown's ability to get, you know, horses that have won the mile and a quarter Hollywood Derby, the Travers, with the right mares, you can get that mile and a quarter horse. And in my opinion, this family is the right type of family for Spike Sand. It's always been about that maturity, and he's going to have the time he needs, and he's already done, like I said, won that grade one at before July. So he's on point.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see the development curve and what it portends. And I brought it up with Andy Beyer as well, you know, looking at a Beyer par about what, you know, you get to Derby and you're looking for a horse that's going to run, you know, a 103 to a, you know, these days, a 103 to a 108 Beyer, and who's capable of that, whether by, you know, projection method and development, you know, forward going, et cetera. Well, the development curve of a three-year-old in September is different. And, you know, it's going to be interesting, Sid, to see a few things. How the various pedigrees respond, how various horsemen adjust, and then later on, depending on who the winner is and what that pedigree looks like, how well received and eager the bloodstock trade is of the classic winning, you know, the classic winners in September, and it's just different. It's going to be a whole new, you know, the reaction to it is going to, I assume, will be, you know, equally different.
Yeah, it's brings a whole new set of factors here. This horse, to me, all these horses have to be kept ticking along and be in great shape by then. So, you know, we normally during the Triple Crown season, you get these horses, the spring three-year-olds, and a lot of them get chewed up through the classics, and then many aren't around, obviously, at the end, right? Well, here it's gonna be a case of how horsemen are able to get through a Preakness and a Belmont and a Travers, say, and still have enough horse for the Derby. Kind of inverted. You're going to get those late maturing horses, arrogate types that come around in the summer that you're going to have to face. And so, you know, it's a whole new ball game of management too. One thing I will tell you about this colt is that he, and I'm talking about Charlatan now, there's a heck of a lot of interest in this horse as a stallion prospect. And, he's going to command a lot of money, even in this marketplace, as a stud prospect. So that's going to be, I'm going to touch a little upon both of these two horses in my column for TDN, which I'll write tomorrow for Friday's paper. It'll come out tomorrow night. But I did speak to Bob Baffert about it. And, you know, he's got three, obviously. He's got these two and Authentic. They're all three different physicals. Anybody watching could see how stout Nadal was, for example. Baffert said he'd honed on him, and he's as fit as he's had him. But when I watched him on TV, I mean, he, as they say, was carrying plenty of condition on him. Turns out this horse, you know, he's about 1,300 pounds. And Baffert thinks he's honed on him enough to get him underneath that 1,300. But he's 16 hands, he's 1,300 pounds, he's extremely stout. Baffert said when he first saw him at the two-year-old sales, he was amazed he went in 10, because looking at him, it looked like he would have gone in 12, because he's that stout a horse. But he's a horse that thrives on a lot of work, and he's experienced, and he said he's very similar to that good filly of Blaine's that Baffert trained, stout filly, I forget her name right now. One of the good ones of Blaine's. Charlatan is 15-3. Charlatan's a beautiful horse. A little different than most Spikestowns, a little longer, not as sprinty looking. Baffert likes to say he's a smaller version of Justify, but he's got a huge stride on him. And, you know, the other horse, Authentic, apparently is a more delicate, finer horse than these two, as equally talented. So he's got a full deck, you know, and three different types. It's amazing the number of horses he's had in his hands lately of such high quality, and a lot of the success of this group of horses has to come down to his affiliation with SF Bloodstock, primarily. That's Tom Ryan, yeah, the face of it, and their group, which has been buying these colts for Baffert to train. And, you know, they had a taste of it as minority partners with Justify, where Windstar was the majority partner with China Horse Club, SF Bloodstock, and then the minor holders like Starlight and Matticat. But since that three-year yearling buying group kind of ended and SF and Starlight kind of went their way buying colts because they wanted more percentage of these horses, they've come up with, you know, already eight rings, who won the grade one last year. He's going to be going to Coolmore, as I mentioned. They've got Charlatan, who's going to, I would estimate, he's going to be syndicated for a lot of money. And they've got Authentic. So that's quite a haul for this group, you know? Yeah, it's incredible. Amazing. And, of course, Baffert has Nadal with a different ownership group here. You know, when you have some of the best guys out there prospecting for you, in baseball, it's like having some of your best scouts out there picking, you know, high round draft prospects for you. And then you have a trainer like Baffert, you know, and Baffert, by the way, has, like, you know, probably the final say in this stuff. It's no wonder that he's able to, you know, collect horses of this high caliber.
No question. You know, he's also attracted. And he said this, in fact, when we had that intimate visit with him at Arizona in December, and you know, he talked about, you know, getting to a point in his career where he attracted these kinds of owners that, you know, their interests were such that they would pay, you know, the top dollar, and it basically gave him the ability to compete at the sales with, you know, with some outfits that he hadn't in the first probably, you know, half of his career. You know, people make out like Baffert's been getting these horses. No, he didn't.
Yeah,
it's only fairly recently that Baffert started to get $700,000, $1 million, $1.5 million yearlings and 2 year olds. That didn't happen, you know, in the '90s and even in the aughts. So it you know, you got a top conditioner, you know, that crafted, you know, notable horses, some homebreds and such as well. But, you know, then you give him a budget to pick out the best stock crop after crop, and that's the formula you're looking at. By the way, Sid, and before we wrap today, I was saving the passing of Preston Madden to bring up with you. And Madden dying yesterday at the age of 85. And, you know, the heir to Hamburg Place and his grandfather's legacy, John Madden, and the Madden family, you know, just institutions in Lexington. And had to mention, and of course, his late wife Anita Madden, was one of the leading society hostesses in the bluegrass for her life, entire life.
Yeah, I mean, really a legendary couple, a guy from, as you mentioned, you know, in the late 1890s, his grandfather J.E. Madden formed Hamburg Place, notable for breeding five Kentucky Derby winners here, including Triple Crown winner Sir Barton. And, you know, it's so much a part of Lexington because if you've been there, that area in Lexington, I forget the name of what it's called now, but it was split up. It's where Hamburg Place was, and all the streets are named after Hamburg horses, Pink Pigeon, Sir Barton Way, so forth. But what happened was, after J.E. Madden died, he passed the farm on to his two sons, and both of those two sons, unrelated and years apart, both committed suicide. And the younger of those sons was Preston Madden's father. And so when Preston inherited the farm, it had been long past the Hamburg Place of J.E. Madden. I don't even think they were breeding horses there at the time. But then Preston, in the mid-50s, started back the heritage that had been established by his grandfather, and Hamburg Place came alive again. In fact, they stood T.V. Lark there, who was the leading sire 1 year, I think, in the early 70s. He was a champion grass horse, and he was the leading sire in the United States. Of course, he also bred Ali Sheba. And so he ended up becoming, as his grandfather had, as a breeder of a Derby winner. And that came about because Warren Admiral, the last couple of years of his career, ended up standing at Hamburg Place. And Madden bred, I believe, his last daughter, that's the second dam of Ali Sheba. She's also the second dam of Learfan. And the Maddens, I only met Preston Madden twice. In fact, I saw him at the sale just last year. He was still at, you know, he was still going around. But one memorable time I met him was, I was fortunate in the 90s to be invited to his Derby Eve party. And it was one of the wildest parties I've ever been to. And I guess that's how it was every year. But as I said, I've only been there once. And, you know, it was mind-blowingly decadent and, you know, just ornate and, you know, just so what you'd not expect from something in Kentucky. But he was a very erudite, sharp guy. Presto, as he was known, and a real character, highly educated, you know, well known for his integrity, and kind of a real character. And it's the end of an era. I wish I had known him better because he would have had some great stories to tell historically. But I do have that one fond memory of being at that party with him and his wife.
I love it. And of course, her Derby party, you know, along with some of the ones, you know, particularly in Louisville, they just a legendary part. And I remember talking, I forget who came on and talked about Anita when she passed. And of course, there's the dam, right? There's somebody named, somebody, I'm going to forget who it is, that named a horse after Anita Madden, and now is out there. You see the sons and daughters, and she's had a couple of nice runners. I mean, nothing special, but I think she's still producing.
Can't recall.
See her name.
Who you're talking about? Yep.
Well, Sid, I appreciate this. I threw all kinds of variety at you, and I also mentioned that we got some first crop sires that are starting to work their babies into the entry box. We'll see a Nyquist on Friday. A couple of others were on the AE list, Frosted, and trying to think, who else did I mention? There was a Frosted, a Nyquist, a Firing Line, and Mishawish. So we're going to start to get some early read, and you got to have your finger on the pulse of this, because you never know, who's gonna pop early and catch a wave. So Stay in tune when it comes to these two-year-old races. Right now at Gulfstream, but I'm sure very quickly at Churchill when they start back next Saturday, a week from Saturday. There it is. Sid, this was great. Thank you.
All right, you got it, Steve. I'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Sire Watch. Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill & Dale. And still time. You should be talking to Sid. Work Thoroughbred Consultants, 510-490-1111. He's got all those secrets. Leon Rasmussen, the secrets of Leon. That he's been blessed with and that have been handed down to him. So take advantage. Let's take a break, and I think we've got Bill Boland lined up for next, and then Brian Bouye, as we're just minutes away from the Hall of Fame announcements. And to see who gets inducted. And, of course, there's Pillars of the Turf. There's the Historic Review Committee. And there's the Contemporary Horses. I think everybody pretty much assumes that Wise Dan is going to waltz in his first year of eligibility. We'll see what else in a little bit. And then Seth Merrow will look probably at some Tampa action today. Nice card there. As well as Fonner and Will Rogers. Back after this, I think we got Bill Boland lined up.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University. University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hey, you! Come out here on the floor.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Come out of here on the floor. Honey, let's rock some more, yeah. Now, when you get out here, don't you have no fear. Put your hands on your hip and let your backbone slip and work out.
We're back at the races. About 5 minutes to the top of the hour, the Hall of Fame announcement is coming, and we'll have that for you after we get a chance to celebrate a terrific anniversary. And it's 70 years ago today, the 1950 Derby, the first one, the first ride in the race for a young Bill Boland. And he would, of course, go on to his own Hall of Fame career. And it's a pleasure to have Bill Boland back on the show. Bill, good morning.
Good morning.
You know, I'm glad we have this chance, because the last time you and I spoke, you joined the show, the tribute to Alan Jerkins, and of course, your career very much tied to the Chief, you know, that was a sad occasion. This is a happy occasion to talk to you about an anniversary 70 years ago.
A long time ago, what?
Well, you sound great, and we talked earlier this morning, and you say things are going well. I think you're still in Florida, right? You're
Palm
West
Coast,
Florida. Yeah. Palm Coast, and you're still banging the peg around? You're still playing golf?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, they closed the courses here, you know, during this epidemic.
Sure.
Pandemic. But they're going to open the 18th, so we'll be back playing.
That a boy. And, of course, after Bill's great riding career, training career, and then a decorated and highly respected steward. But, Bill, take us back to 1950 and even 1949, because you latched on to King Ranch and to Max Hirsch, and it really was a great way to launch your career.
Yeah, well, I went to work for the King Ranch in 1947 in Kingsville, Texas. I was only like 13 years old, so.
Wow.
And then we stayed with him until the spring of 48, and then we went to New York on the train with 40 head of horses. And we got to New York, it was snowing, and I couldn't get over it. I never saw snow until we got to New York. Never snows in Corpus.
No. How young were you when you were, you know, starting to get on good horses?
I was like 14. I was, you know, I was a pretty good exercise boy. That's why Mr. Hirsch gave me a chance to ride, because I could gallop a lot of horses, you know. I remember one winter we were down in Columbia, South Carolina, and everybody went home for Christmas, but three exercise boys, and we had 75 horses, and we got on them every day, the three of us.
Wow.
So we learned how to ride.
that's nuts, actually. 25 a day? How long did that go on? Like a week, 10 days?
It was almost a month.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, and then did you guys have to groom them as well?
Pardon me?
Did you guys have to brush them as well?
No. We just exercised them, and they had their grooms and everything.
Nice.
Well, we never got through the day.
I was going to say that you know, that would have been a 10-hour project on a daily basis or more. That's
maybe 24.
Yeah, exactly. Bring you in shifts.
Right.
You were just 16, and it seems, you know, there's certainly, Bill, you know, young riders that get their chances in the Derby, but I mean, it would seem impossible that somebody at the age of 16 would, you know, I think you were almost 17 at the time even, but still.
Yeah.
Talk about being in the position to even ride in the Derby.
Right. Well, I went to California in like the winter of 49, and that's where I really learned how to ride and really came into my own. At San Anita, I was riding against Arcaro and Shoemaker and Longdon and those kind of guys, and I did very well. So then when I came back to New York in the spring, I was like leading rider in New York. And the week before the Derby, Mr. Hirsch put me on a horse called Better Self, and we won the Gallant Fox Handicap. And then we went on to Kentucky. Following Monday, we shipped to Kentucky, and that Friday before, I won the Oaks and then won the Derby the next day.
And, you know, that I'm glad you brought that up, the fact that you were one of, you know, there's a handful of riders that have had the Friday-Saturday double where, you know, winning the Oaks and then coming back and winning the Derby. One of the things that's amazing, Bill, when you look at Middle Ground's season, is the way Hirsch was so clever about getting him to peak for the Triple Crown season. And there was a very intense period where what did he run, four times, five times in a month, in 6 weeks maybe?
Yeah. Well, he didn't run the only run three or four times as a two-year-old, so he didn't have much seasoning. And he wanted to, get some racing and fitness under him, so he ran him three quarters a couple of times, and then he ran him a mile and 16th against a horse called My Request, who was a real good horse
right at
one time. And then he ran in the woods, and he finished second to Old Prince. And then we went to Kentucky, and he ran in the Derby trials the week before, and he finished second to Mr. Black, who was a superior mud horse. Middle Ground wasn't the best in the mud, so, but he ran a good race. And then next Saturday won.
What's interesting, too, it seems like the public, they had sort of not soured on him because he was only 8-1 and 14 horse field, but it seems like that series of of races where he didn't win, you know, sort of, you know, made people, you know, discount him a little bit, and in fact, Hill Prince too, but your host, I think, was your host might have gone favored. Yeah, he did go favored.
He was favored, yeah.
With Longdon, a bit of a speedball, right?
And my orders in the race, when I walked in the paddock, the only orders I got from Mr. Hirsch, he said, I don't want you to be within 10 lengths of your host going to the first turn. So, and then you're on your own after that.
That's Bill Boland is with us. Well, and I want you to mention, I want to mention, too, that, this had to be... Was this your first trip through Churchill? Had you ridden to Churchill coming into the spring?
No, it was my first time.
How about that?
Yeah. But I got was real lucky right about that time. You know, like I say, I won the Gallant Fox on a Saturday, then went to Kentucky. And I think the first three or four horses I rode at Churchill Downs, I had an agent down there, and I think they all won. And then I got the mount on the Arrows Mount and the Oaks, and then the Derby the next day. So. But I was on a
Aries,
roll.
Well, and clearly, and that Arrows Mona, was that also a King Ranch horse?
No. In fact, I only got the mine on her the day before the race. The a jock called Doug Dotson was riding her, and he was supposed to ride her in there in the Oaks, and for some reason whether he couldn't make the weight or whatever happened, but the owner of the horse came over to the barn where I was with Middle Ground exercising him, and he came over and he asked Mr. Hirsch if it would be all right if he rides my horse in the Oaks tomorrow. So I said, absolutely.
So you win the Oaks. You win the Oaks on a pickup mount.
Right.
That's great. That's unbelievable.
The day before.
Well, not a bad weekend. You get to Saturday, and you know, for people who aren't as much of a history buff, we've already mentioned some of the names, but this was a nice field because right, Hill Prince, Sun Glow, your host, you had some nice horses that you faced off against, and Hirsch was quoted as you're saying you guys expected a fast pace, and it really worked out that way.
Yeah. And then we went on to the Preakness. He should have won the Preakness. You know, he got bothered going the first turn. A horse called Mr. Trouble bolted, and I was lapped on him, and I couldn't get back off his heels, and he took me the outside fence. And Hill Prince got to on the inside and opened up like 4 or 5 lengths. And he beat me a couple lengths, but I think I would have won the Preakness. So he'd have been a Triple Crown winner.
You know, I'm glad you brought this up because, you know, let's fold in the way the Derby unfolded, too, because he ends up winning, you know, resoundingly. I mean, he won with authority. And, you know, we'll talk about the Belmont, too, which I know you've been quoted. Vance Hansen wrote a wonderful piece with you last year, and you said it was one of the easiest wins of your career. But for whatever reason, Bill, it's strange. When people talk about near misses in Triple Crowns and horses that could very much easily have won a Triple Crown had you know, trouble or something hadn't gone wrong, he doesn't get enough mention, but he very well could have been a Triple Crown winner.
Right. Well, you know, those years they didn't have the films, you know, like they do now, so half the people didn't even know I got bothered.
Yeah, I'm looking at the win picture, and in that era, you guys are all up on the stanchion, up on by the podium, and the horse has been unsaddled, and they took the picture of him. He looks fairly compact.
He was
and low to the ground, but he was kind of long bodied at the same time.
What happened in there, you know, when we were walking into the winner's circle, Max Hirsch, you know, he was all nervous and everything, you know, winning and everything, and he told me, he said, get off of him, he's tired. So I got down, so they didn't have a picture in the winner's circle with me sitting on him with the flowers.
And you know what? I'm just looking through my old guide, and you're right. It's the only picture where you didn't get that with the drape
right
over you.
If it had been a different time, I wouldn't have listened to him. But, you know, I was a bug rider at the time, and and the old man was kind of a tough boss. So when he said, get off him, I got off. Otherwise, I'd have stayed on it, you know.
Well, we see you, you know, in the background looking down at him in that very familiar and legendary set of colors. That, you know, assault the course in terms of Triple Crowns and you know, Hirsch's record, that was his third win. He had won with Bold Venture, who of course was the sire of Middle Ground, and then 10 years later with Assault, and then 4 years hence with Middle Ground, three Derby wins for Max Hirsch and King Ranch. Amazing. Talk about the Belmont, because you absolutely drowned him in there.
Yeah, that was he in the Belmont, you know, was he had like an inside post, and he didn't break real sharp. And I got lucky going the first turn. I got in behind Hill Prince, and Hill Prince was kind of ranked going that far. And he, like, went to the lead, and I followed him. I went from, like, next to last to laying third. I never went around a horse, you know. But I never had to let him run. He was so much the best in the Belmont. He could have won by probably 10 lengths. And I just let him ease on down there, you know.
Well, in the mile and a half, I mean, it certainly seemed to suit him. When you see the way he travels, he just was, it seems like one of those horses that, you know, as he got going, he got into a rhythm.
He was very easy to rate. He was very kind. And so if you just, like, come out and, like, relaxed on him, he'd relax under you. And if you picked him up and, like, chirped on him, he'd take off. He could make two or three runs.
Nice. That's the mark of a good horse. How quickly, Bill, did you realize, how momentous this was? I mean, it was after the Derby. Was it later in the spring? You know, when you realized what you had accomplished at such a young age?
Yeah, probably not until the next year. We went back and I rode a horse called Sonic, and then you walk out on the track and they play My Old Kentucky Home, and your heart starts fluttering a little bit, you know. That's when I kind of figured that, you know. I think if I'd have been a little older, I would have appreciated it more at the time. But, you know, 16, you know, what the hell? I thought that was the way it was.
Figured you probably win a bunch of these, and look, you of course won countless. I mean, we can certainly talk about a few of them, but the next time you came really close was 9 years later. Talk about Sword Dancer and 59.
Yeah, Sword Dancer. Well, I don't know whether if they would have taken a number down, but I did get bothered in the race.
Right.
If it was enough to take it down, I don't know, you know. But I know the first Derby I rode in, in 1950, the stewards called us all in, and they said, we will not take a number down in the Derby, but if you jocks cause any trouble, we'll give you up to a year suspension. In other words, commit murder, but, you get a year. So those in those days, they wouldn't take it down, but... And even I've watched the films after the stretch run, and I can see where I got bothered, but, and it was enough to, you know, because he only could beat a nose, so it was enough, you know. If I'd have been a steward, I probably wouldn't take it down either, so I don't know.
That's interesting that you take that angle.
Yeah. At the time, I thought it would come down, but. After I looked at it, maybe not.
I'm curious. When it came to you and Elliot Birch, with him, you've got one of the strangest records, Bill, when it comes to riding a horse, like a Sword Dancer. You broke his maiden, and you rode him in the Derby, and then you didn't ride him in any of his other 37 starts.
No. Well, Shoemaker had to call on him. He was very close with the Birches, and he could have rode him in the Derby, but he'd already, give his word to ride Tommy Lee. But any time that Preston Birch could get Shoemaker, he would take him, you know. He thought he was great, you know.
There's some names, Bill, that are associated with Sword Dancer, you know, particularly early in his career that we touch on, and I've touched on here. Tony Black joins us every week, and there's right. Sam Bonitas, who rode Sword Dancer a lot.
Right.
And you also, you, Boy, Eldon Nelson couldn't have been happy with you when you got talk about those two starts at Saratoga, because Eldon rode him. Actually, Eldon rode him at Delaware, and then you picked him up at Saratoga.
Right. Right. Yeah, I broke his maiden at Saratoga.
Yep, and won well. Going how far? 6 furlongs.
You're right. Right.
Sword Dancer, and you know, there's in the story that I mentioned that Vance Hansen wrote, he had a nice aside that you brought up with Tommy Lee having won the Derby and with the incident, but yet you got a chance against Tommy Lee separately out in California in the cinema.
Right, I beat him with a good filler, yeah.
Silver Spoon,
yeah. You know, I broke Tommy Lee's maiden at Santa Anita going 3/8 of a mile.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, first time he ever started. The only time he started as a 2-year-old or at Santa Anita 3/8. He won easy. Yeah. And then I didn't get to ride him again, you know, after that.
And Tommy, if I'm not mistaken, Tommy Lee was an import, right? He came from abroad.
Right, right. Yeah, Texas outfit. The people in Texas owned him. I don't know if they bought him in the sales or bought him over there and brought him here. I'm not sure how that went.
Well, that's interesting that you broke. And Frank Childs, a horseman that I can't say I know anything about.
Yeah, I don't know too much. I didn't know too much about him either, but I do know that I rode him his first start.
Yeah. Well, and of course, Silver Spoon, a champion in her own right.
Oh, she was a great filly in California. She left California. She would run all right, but she wasn't near what she was out there. She could carry 130 pounds in California and beat most males, you know. But you brought her to New York, and she, the sandy tracks or whatever they were, but she wasn't near what she was in California.
And speaking of Eldon Nelson, Nelson broke her maiden, and then Ray York rode her a bunch of times, including in in that win in the Santa Anita Derby.
Right, right, and he rode her in the Derby, yeah.
Yep. And then you picked up the mount, and you had the cinema, the Delaware Oaks, an allowance, the Monmouth Oaks, and an allowance when she came east. And boy, you're right. She ran okay, but she got beat by some rivals that really weren't of her class.
No. But she was a great filly in California, though.
When it comes to a career, Bill, like you had, are the the biggest moments like a middle ground? Is that the highlight, or is it with being associated with a certain great horse?
Yeah, well, like all the races I won, 90% of the time it was the horse, and you just try to keep him out of trouble and finish, but there was a few races that I won that I felt that I had a lot to do with it, like the Man of War Stakes at Beau Purple. I thought that not too many riders would have won that race on Beau Purple, But that's a great feeling, when you feel like that you had something to do with it, or a lot to do with it.
You won a couple, actually. You won with Dotted Line.
Yeah, she was a filly against the best grass horses in America.
And that was for Hirsch. That was still for Hirsch and King Ranch.
That's King Ranch, yeah.
And then Beau Purple for Alan 3 years later. You must appreciate given you know, the kinds of, you know, the kinds of winners that, that you've had, the, you know, the way the turf has evolved, Bill, and probably as a steward too, and as a trainer, you got to be amazed at how turf has really taken root in this country.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, when I first started riding, there was no turf racing.
Right.
The only turf racing they had was at Santa Anita.
And then by the end,
the San Juan Capistrano, a mile and three quarters.
Right. Well, and then you know, by the end of the decade, though, I think, you know, Roundtable. You think about what Roundtable accomplished, and it was really right about then that turf started to, you know, become part of the. How much tougher when it comes to stewarding?
I think Laurel also had grass racing.
Yes.
You know, they had the Laurel International.
That's right. The D.C., that's right. That's right. And Atlantic City. Atlantic City must have been at that time. Immediately come to the prominence. How much, Bill, these days, how much, you know, do you watch some action? Do you follow the game still a little bit, or
no? Here in Florida, everything is car racing, you know.
NASCAR,
Daytona 500, you know.
But, yeah, exactly.
You know, you get nothing in the papers about racing, you know. Get it on television once in a while, but the only thing I watch now is like the Triple Crown and the big races in the fall, you know.
Sure, the Cup. Well, you know, Hall of Famer, and I can actually tell you, they've announced already, and a small class. Mark Cassie has been elected to the Hall of Fame, along with Wise Dan. How about that?
That's good. He deserves it.
And Wise Dan, Charlie Lopresti, and that was a kind of a slam dunk. From the historic side, Daryl McHarg has been elected.
Has he, Daryl? Yeah. Good.
Daryl McHarg is elected. How about that? And Tom Bowling, the historic runner. And then, Mrs. Chandler, Alice Headley Chandler, has been elected. Uh-huh. Keen Dangerfield and George Widener, this from the Pillars of Turf. And Mrs. Chandler, she's still alive, I believe.
Yeah, I think so.
That's wonderful, Alice Chandler. That's great. So there's. Do you come, Bill? How? When was the last time you came up for the ceremony?
When I got it in 06.
Oh,
I haven't been up since then.
Well,
it's a long ride for an old man, you know.
Listen, people are listening to you, and nobody's going to believe you're 85 or what? 85 or 86?
I'm going to be 87.
87. Your birthday's coming up, actually.
Yeah, 16th July.
There you go. Unbelievable. You sound phenomenal, and I'm sure you can't believe it's 70 years, and listening to you, I'm sure it,
I've been married 69
you know,
years.
Oh, that's wow! That's a record. That's
it's going to be 70 in July.
Oh, that's wonderful, unbelievable.
It's going to be 69 in July. I'm sorry.
Okay, it's coming off. Well, then you're going to make it to 70 is the magic number. We're going to your 70th anniversary of Middle Ground today, and 70th wedding anniversary next year, Bill. I can't thank you enough for this, and I'm glad we had the opportunity because, you know, the last time we talked, as I said, it was remembering Alan, and you were so generous that day, but it was sad, and this is much happier.
Well, it's good talking to you at any time.
Bill Boland, everybody, and a Hall of Fame rider, a legendary steward, a successful trainer, and obviously pretty good husband. 69 years coming up, and a hell of a golfer as well. What a treat, Bill Boland. We do have a tape of the from YouTube of the call, and Con McCreary did the radio broadcast. But
Con
McCreary, to be honest, do you want to hear it? When was the last time you heard this, if ever?
I've never heard Con, no.
Oh, here we go then. All right, then we're going to play it. Stay with us, and there's a couple of mistakes, but here it is.
Okay. And right beside him is Mr. Trouble, and Dooley, and Sunglow, and Hill Prince. Hill Prince is well up, and so is Trumpet King. As they come to the stand, Hawley on the outside is doing all right. And now Hill Prince has dropped back, and Sunglow on the inside is astonishingly close up. And Your Host goes by the stand, a length and a half on the lead. Black George is in second place, and it is Mr. Trouble lying third. Hawley is fourth, and Middle Ground is fifth. And in sixth place is Trumpet King. Oil Capital is seventh. And around that turn, Sunglow is eighth. And on the mark is ninth. And slipping through on the inside. And here comes Hill Prince on the outside. Hill Prince with a rush. Johnny Longdon's at the whip on Your Host. Fighting gamer than anybody thought. He's still there battling. Only got 200 yards to come. Mr. Trouble's driving. Hill Prince swerved over. He's trying to come through between horses. And ladies and gentlemen, believe me or not, the horse supposed is Middleburg coming in the outside. Middleburg on the outside took that lead in the last 50 yards. Middle Ground, the winner, Hill Prince second, Mr. Trouble third.
That was Clem McCarthy.
Clem, I said Con McCreary. That's right, Clem McCarthy. That's my Clem mistake. McCarthy. That's right. He called
Middleburg.
You Middleburg in Virginia. Probably it must have
right.
been on his mind.
Right.
I love it. I love it. Clem McCarthy. Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so that was a radio broadcast. There's no,
right.
you know, there was wasn't on TV yet.
No,
and the newsreels, right?
They would give you the news or whatever it was.
Exactly, exactly. You'd watch the Derby the next Saturday in the movie theater at a matinee.
Right. RKO news.
Exactly. Now you're talking. Bill Boland, a real treat. Stay well, stay safe with our current conditions, and we look forward to talking again.
Okay. Take care.
You too. Bill Boland, everybody. Let's take a break. We'll get a visit in regarding the Hall of Fame and Brian Bouye to talk about this group. Just two contemporaries, Mark Cassie and Wise Dan. And then the rest part of the historic review process and the Pillars of the Turf. Brian Bouye next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years old or 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand including myself, I didn't. Now I do. The impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation. It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'll come back. Ask your doctor, check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Step on side to side. Body's gently moving. I let myself fly these times. Dance for miles and miles. Crowd's been slow.
We're back at the races, bottom of the hour, and about 25 minutes ago, give or take, as we were talking to Bill Boland, the news that the Hall of Fame class has been released. And as I mentioned, with Bill, I figured he'd get a kick out of one of the historic review inductees, and he did, and actually I think he also was tickled by one of the contemporaries as well. And Brian Bouye joins us from the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame that is getting ready for a complete overhaul and modernization and interactive things that are going to be going on in the new Hall of Fame. But when it comes to this tradition, that remains unchanged.